Friends, can bodily changes be produced by the power of the mind and the spirit of man? Are all diseases susceptible of cure by spiritual healing alone? And what is the rationale of mental and spiritual healing? How does it work? How may the sufferer cooperate? And is there a simple technique which one could practice successfully, whether one possesses unusual powers of mind and spirit or not? These are interesting questions, aren't they? Especially just now when there seems to be a great wave throughout the world, particularly the Western world, of interest in spiritual healing. So in this address to you on this important subject of spiritual healing, I shall be dealing with one of the commonest, in the right meaning of that word, the most universal, and I think noblest of human aspirations, to be able to heal by the powers of one's mind and of the spirit. The rationale and the method of spiritual healing are indeed worthy of careful consideration. And those of you who might expect me now to go straight to the heart of the matter and provide a method and a formula which can be applied immediately with assurance of success, if you feel like that, may I ask you to excuse a somewhat detailed approach to a profound subject. Indeed, I don't believe that a universal panacea, material or spiritual, exists. Not one which can give immediate results. From the first, it is important to remember that there are physical causes and physical cures of disease. And those who are very seriously ill are advised to consult a reputable and trustworthy physician. At the same time, however, it has now been scientifically demonstrated that the root causes of many of the sufferings of mankind do lie deeper than the physical body. Many diseases of man are now known to have their origins in man's emotional and mental natures. The emergence and rapid development of what has come to be called psychosomatic medicine established this fact and point directly to the value of psychological, mental, and spiritual methods of healing. First of all, let us just look at this development called psychosomatic medicine. What is that exactly? We need to know something about it because spiritual healing is bound up with the idea. Well, psychosomatic medicine is based on the fact that the mind and the body are inseparable and together constitute the human being, apart from his inner, immortal, divine nature. The word psychosomatic, as is well known nowadays, is derived from the Greek word psyche, meaning mind or soul, and soma, the body. It is therefore a fresh approach to all medicine, at least fresh in modern days. This new attitude recognizes the fact that the human being is complex and mysterious, a creature whose brain, emotions, and tissues are constantly reacting one upon the other. As we all know, we do some things deliberately. We run, or work, or eat by our own will, for example. We do not decide, however, to blush with embarrassment, or to double our heartbeat with rage. These actions are controlled by what is called the involuntary or autonomic nervous systems. Such deep feelings as hate, fear, and the need for love, of which we may be wholly or partly unconscious, may find expression through this involuntary system. If, For example, a mother is worried over her children's health, or is afraid they're not getting along well in school. She may have an attack of indigestion. She has an upset stomach because she's depressed and anxious. If she continues to make herself sick over a sufficient period of time, and this is very strange, then a real damage to the tissues may ensue. Emotional conditions can actually affect the physical cells. A person with a possibly serious gastrointestinal complaint may go to a doctor. He may find that the illness is caused by emotional tension, whereupon, if versed in psychosomatic medicine, he would not only treat the physical ailment, but would also look for the cause in the patient's mental or emotional structure and in his relationship with his environment. A physician in America, Dr. John A. Schindler, has said that psychosomatic illness is not produced by a bacterium, a virus, or by a growth. It's produced by the circumstances of daily living. And the chief causes of our physical troubles can be the cares, the difficulties, the heartaches and problems of our daily lives. Well, the science known as theosophy agrees. For theosophy teaches that we do not think with the brain alone. Thinking involves the entire body and the superphysical part of man in a series of complicated nerve and mental impulses that center physically in the brain. Anger, for example, causes the face to become white or red, the eyes to widen, the muscles to tighten, and cause trembling. Embarrassment produces dilation of the blood vessels in the face, and this causes what we call blushing. Emotion affects the endocrine system. Sudden acute fear, such as a near motor smash, sends an impulse to the adrenal glands. These glands squeeze adrenaline into the system, thereby causing palpitation of the heart. This consideration of the physical effect of thoughts and feelings leads us directly to our subject, that of spiritual healing. We have to consider, then, what are the parts played respectively by the healer and the sufferer. Knowing about psychosomatic medicine, how can we penetrate to the very heart of the problem, and how may the sufferers best cooperate with the spiritual healer? The answers to these questions, as in fact to every other question concerning humanity, the answer to these questions are dependent upon knowledge of the true nature of man. So I must seem to digress a few moments just to convey that knowledge. What is man? Theosophy answers that he's primarily a thinker, hence his name. For the word man comes from the Sanskrit word man, meaning to think. Man is also, however, a being of emotion and of physical activity, whilst, in addition, overshadowing and acting through thought, emotion, word, and deed is the true self, the innermost self of man, the immortal soul, the divine spirit in him. Now this brings us to a profound truth, which is that the spiritual soul of man is forever at one with the source of its existence. Man's spirit and God's spirit are one spirit. That is a most important truth. It's called the royal secret, or the sovereign secret. Man's spirit and God's spirit are one spirit. Now, when this begins to be realized, this unity, when the divine power and the presence within man begins to be known, then that mighty power can be tapped and released for the service of one's fellow men. And it is this power within man which performs the apparent miracles of spiritual healing. And that's why I have spent a little time with you in discussing the makeup of man, particularly his spiritual self or soul. Following on those ideas, the first step in preparing oneself to become a spiritual healer is, in fact, self-realization, self-discovery. The innermost self, the divine presence, should be sought by means of regular daily meditation. Thereafter, and by the regular practice of spiritual healing, the faculty may be developed of drawing upon the power within, transmuting it for the help of those in need. Not only transmuting, but transmitting it for the help of those in need. So you see, we are, from a study of theosophy, presented with a certain idea of man, the concept of man as a power unit, through whom the divine creative life force flows continually. Man in his spiritual nature may be regarded as relaying throughout his whole being power from the inexhaustible universal source, which is God. This applies very closely to health, for the unimpeded rhythmic flow of this divine energy throughout man's nature is essential to health and happiness. The unimpeded rhythmic flow of the inner divine energy throughout man's nature is essential to health and happiness, for this creative life of God in us is a mighty and irresistible force. When it flows freely through us, it vitalizes us, and it can heal us when we're sick. In fact, it does so. This is the real healing force. Now, resistance to this force in thought, feeling, and action sets up friction, discordance, and distortion, which can cause physical malfunction and disease. Now, if you can accept that, we are able to give a definition of health. What is health, then? Well, in terms of dynamics, health is the unimpeded rhythmic flow of divine power, life, and consciousness from the inner higher self of man throughout all his vehicles. The unimpeded rhythmic flow of divine power from the inner higher self of man throughout all his vehicles. Ill health comes to us then because somewhere in our nature a condition exists which obstructs, diverts from its proper channels, or imparts a discordance to this universal life force. Spiritual healing can remove these interior obstructions, these barriers at the mental, the emotional, and the physical level. That's why I'm talking about them first, because they play their part in the process of spiritual healing. But then how is it that these barriers get established within us? What have we done to set up discordances and obstructions to the flow of the divine vitalizing life throughout our nature? Well, many things we do. We violate the law of love, and we violate the principle of the unity of life. We inflict pain on others, and we misuse and abuse the forces and capacities of our bodies, don't we? Well, it's from these errors that the obstructions are set up. This violation takes two forms, objective and subjective. Objectively, selfishness and cruelty in word and deed set up discordances within us. Hurting others, do please remember this, friends, hurting others is one of the root causes of human suffering, not only for those who are hurt, But under the law of cause and effect, for the very people who produce the hurt, who violate the principle of unity by needlessly inflicting pain. Such, then, is one objective cause of barriers to the free flow throughout man's nature of God's creative life force, hurting others. Now, these barriers must be swept away before health can be fully restored. Mental and spiritual healing, with the full cooperation of the sufferer, particularly in self-correction, mental and spiritual healing are effective means of accomplishing this clearing of the psychological part of man. Now, the subjectively set up barriers which cause ill health, they're generated by our thoughts and our feelings of hate, dislike, desire to dominate, bitterness, anger, malice, and unforgivingness. Hate, dislike, desire to dominate, bitterness, anger, malice, unforgivingness, nursing a grudge, you might say. These are veritable toxins, and they can poison the bodily system. Here is a simple but sure recipe for good health and happiness. Cease from hurting others in thought and word and deed. As I have said, there is another way in which we bring ill health upon ourselves. It is by the misuse of our bodies, for the body is indeed a temple of the God self within. As St. Paul said in the 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 16, know ye not that ye are the temple of the living God? Our bodies, then, are temples of the God self within, and the potential vehicles by means of which the inner soul gains experience necessary to its evolutionary progress. We mustn't hurt, abuse, debase our bodies, then. If we do, we get an adverse effect upon our minds and hearts and bodies themselves. So you see, and this is what I've been gradually leading up to, this is why I'm taking time to approach this subject of spiritual healing gradually. Health depends upon ethics, upon right conduct in thought, word, diet, and habits of life. That's not generally realized, is it? Health, really good health, depends upon ethics, upon right conduct in thought, word, deed, diet, and habits of life. The healer's true purpose, then, is to help the sufferer to reorient the mind and more especially to adopt a right attitude towards life. His task is to remove those interior barriers and restore the harmonious flow of the inner life throughout the whole nature of the sufferer. And then that life will perform the healing power. Successfully applied, spiritual healing brings down an immense flood of divine life which can revitalize and heal mind, emotion, and body. Now, considering how this may be brought about, let us think of how the suppliant should cooperate. Well, I find in my own practice of spiritual healing, which is fairly continuous, I find that the suppliant should cooperate first and foremost by a genuine and sincere endeavor to correct errors in character, in thought, feeling, and the conduct of life. The mental attitude of the patient should be one of intelligent acceptance of misfortune, not of bitterness against it. Acceptance based upon recognition of personal responsibility under the law of cause and effect. Above all, I repeat, there must be neither resentment nor bitterness, and there must be a genuine help and search for cure. Here are five rules which those who seek spiritual healing, indeed, all who would achieve and maintain health and happiness would do well to obey. cultivate a state of goodwill to all people, never by thought, word, or deed unnecessarily hurting any other person. Harmoniousness and harmlessness to all are the great preventives against ill health. Then develop a habit of happiness. The perfect lubricant for stiff joints is the oil of joy. Then do not nurse grievances. Deliberately forgive all who have hurt you, as you hope to be forgiven by those whom you may have hurt yourself. Send out affection to all. As harmlessness prevents, so loving kindness cures disease and suffering. Then, fifth idea, link up regularly every day with the one great spiritual source of spiritual power and blessing which is within you. For by this daily regime of prayer and meditation, the outer personal nature becomes empowered and unified, and a true dedicated attitude towards life is gradually developed and maintained. And if those five simple rules for health and happiness are followed, then health should be ours. Both healers and suppliants would do well to follow them. Does this statement that such actions can actually cure disease? Is it rather far-fetched to say that the conditions of mind and emotion can actually affect the body? In reality, they do far more than cure disease, these right thoughts, feelings, and actions. They not only cure disease, they prevent it from occurring. Goodwill, the habit of happiness, forgiveness and loving kindness, combined with an intelligent way of living, these produce good health, just as their opposites produce ill health. I have found another set of rules which I might perhaps put before you. They are by that same Dr. John A. Schindler, who is the chief physician of the Monroe Clinic in the state of Wisconsin in the United States of America. He's drawn up 8 rules which I think also are very valuable. Will you listen whilst I read them? He says, don't continually look for trouble. Learn to like work, thus avoiding tension arising when work is disliked. Have a hobby which gets your mind off the work tension. During work, relax occasionally and briefly to think of the hobby. Learn to like people. How important that is. Learn to like people. Avoid grudges against anyone, for this is disastrous. We have to live with people, so let us learn to like them. Be satisfied when the situation is such that you cannot readily and easily change it. If you cannot easily adjust the situation, adjust yourself to it. Learn to accept adversity. Don't let it defeat you. Don't brood on trouble, and don't wallow in self pity. Learn to say the cheerful, humorous thing. Never say the mean or cruel thing. Help others to feel better, and you'll feel better yourself. And his 8th rule, meet problems with decision. Decide what you're going to do, and then stop thinking about it. Doesn't that all seem very wise to you? It does to me. By these means, says Dr. Schindler, harmful mental and emotional habits will be avoided, and physical health be far more easily attained. I would add that if you wish to be a spiritual healer, you should not only live to these rules as far as the weaknesses of human nature permit, but get the patients, the suppliants for healing, manfully to try and do the same. Then when you have thus prepared the ground, as it were, and have the cooperation of the suppliant, you can then move to whatever form or practice of spiritual healing, prayer or affirmation or invocation, whatever it may be, you can then move towards effective healing service. What is a good method? Well, let me suggest. Here is a suggested process of spiritual healing, whether the sufferers are present with you or not. Actually, that doesn't really matter very much. Absent healing can be very, very effective, though in some cases physical presence is desirable. Here then is a simple but highly effective method, which may be used either when one is alone or working with a group. Healing groups are very, very valuable human activities and can be wonderfully effective. If you're going to try this, then first have a list of the Christian and surnames of those to be healed. Then, in complete privacy, with the body relaxed, turn the thoughts in powerful concentration to a recognized healing source. For many Christians, doubtless this will be God himself, or perhaps the Lord Jesus Christ, the great healer of men. There is indeed an unfailing source of healing grace and spiritual power. Then visualize our Lord and reverently draw near to him, seeking to realize his very presence. Then, with half-minute pauses for concentration and visualization after each phrase, repeat aloud with powerful intent such an invocation as this. Remember, you're in the presence of the Lord Christ. Mentally, you've lifted the patient into that presence. Then you invoke, using the Christian and surnames, may the healing power of the Lord Christ descend upon. Here mention the Christian and the surnames, as I've said, of those to be healed, with a pause of some seconds between each name. During the pause, visualize the sufferers as radiantly well, as in the very presence of the Lord Christ, flooded by his glorious healing power and golden light. After all the names have been mentioned, then you continue. May Christ's healing power descend upon them all, and may the holy angels encompass them. After a further pause for clear visualization of that, conclude by saying, may the light of Christ's love enfold them forever. Amen. There, friends, is a simple but most effective form for the invocation and distribution of Christ's healing grace and power. Those who will sincerely, selflessly, and regularly follow this procedure will indubitably prove to themselves that any reasonably intelligent, unselfish person can learn to heal effectively by the powers of the mind and the spirit.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you are interested in the subject of healing, Mr. Geoffrey Hodson has written a book entitled New Light on the Problem of Disease. He is also the author of many other theosophical books, and his titles include Theosophy Answers Some Problems of Life, Man's Supersensory and Spiritual Powers, The Miracle of Birth, and The Seven Human Temperaments. There is also available a large range of other theosophical literature on many subjects. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.